Hello, it's Scott Manley here. In the last week, a paper appeared documenting an experiment which, well, to my mind, shows that life almost certainly exists beyond Earth, or at least has existed in the past, for sure. They didn't look at biosignatures in space, they didn't look at Mars rocks, they simply built a rig to slap microbes really hard, specifically a species colloquially known as Conan the Bacterium. Yes, there are many meteorites that have been discovered that are believed to have come from Mars. And we know that they come from Mars because they have tiny gas bubbles inside them that have isotope ratios that match the atmosphere of Mars. And you might remember that in the 1990s there was a discovery of tiny structures in a Martian meteorite which looked plausibly biological. There was even a high-profile press conference featuring the president, Bill Clinton. And while that particular claim may have been premature, there's always been the question of whether life forms on meteorites ejected from a planet could travel to another world. So how would rocks from Mars get off the surface and into space so that they could become meteorites on Earth? Well, it's generally believed that this happens because they've been ejected by the impact of an asteroid. For a long time, we've known that the Earth, Mars, and, well, basically every other planet in the solar system get hit by asteroids throughout their life. And while we all know about the impact that ended the reign of the dinosaurs, the Chicxulub event, 65 million years ago, there's been many, many more impacts that show up in Earth's geological record. Some have left evidence of craters 100 miles wide. Others have created layers of spherules, tiny glass spheres that formed when vaporized rock that was ejected from a crater condensed and then rained down onto the surface, creating layers in the sediment. When impact events create a crater, they make a big hole in the ground, and that material has to go somewhere. And the bigger the event, the more material is thrown up, and the larger the chance that some of that material is going fast enough to reach escape velocity from the planet. And it's reasonable to ask now, if there were living creatures in the vicinity of the impact, could they ride along on those chunks of rock and become space travelers? But the process of an impact creates powerful shockwaves in the rocks. One of the reasons we can recognize an impact crater is because the shocks are powerful enough to rearrange the crystal structure of minerals like quartz into entirely new phases. If these kind of transient pressures can transform rocks, it's very likely that those same pressures can easily smash these little microbes, well, like bugs, reorganizing biological structures at the molecular level into something that can't support life. The fragments that escape the planet are the ones that go the fastest, and so by definition, they are the ones that are going to get hit hardest. So could life survive? Maybe somewhere in the chaos of an impact, there's a range of conditions where the ejecta is accelerated fast enough to escape the planet, but not hit so hard that it's sterilized. And maybe there are fragments of rock that can carry living organisms into space and to a new home. Maybe life could move between Mars and Earth, and vice versa. And since I mentioned the planet Earth, I want to switch gears for a moment and introduce Planet Wild, who have partnered with me on this video. And they're kind of unique. They essentially offer crowdfunding for nature. I love to hike in the wilderness to think about stories that I want to tell, and I like what Planet Wild are doing. Every month, their community of over 20,000 members fund a mission to restore ecosystems, putting the wild back into wilderness. All of these missions are documented right here on YouTube, so we can see what our contributions have helped achieve. For example, in one of the latest missions, the contributions helped build wildlife crossings over highways. Sure, I may be talking about life crossing interplanetary space, but there's life on Earth that is having trouble crossing highways that have created barriers to their migration in wilderness areas. When the roads in these areas were first built, the full impact of the roads on the wildlife wasn't really appreciated. And in turn, we found out about the impact of the wildlife on vehicles, which definitely became a bit of a problem. The result of this kind of project is fewer deadly vehicle-wildlife collisions and reconnected grizzly populations. What sets Planet Wild apart is that when members join the community, you can talk with your peers on their Discord and see these well-produced videos showing the results. So you can see how your contributions are resulting in real changes. You can be part of something bigger. Not everyone is in the right place or has the time to do things like help a grizzly cross a highway, but Planet Wild lets you be part of this from your sofa. If you want to join this growing community that makes a difference in nature, consider joining Planet Wild. You can give whatever amount, big or small, that feels right to you. And the first 100 people to sign up using my code, MANLY23, will get their first month covered for free. Just scan this QR code or click the link in the description. You'll immediately have an impact in nature and see the results in less than 30 days here on YouTube. And there's no catch here. You cancel anytime. If you want to see them in action, check out their Wildlife Crossing mission linked below. And now, from open space, we go back to outer space. So now, one question about this theory has always been how tough life can be, what conditions are survivable, and how can these conditions be measured and quantified in such a way that we can then use them in existing simulations of processes like crater formation. These simulations use numerical models that calculate pressures, velocities, densities, and temperatures of the surface and the rocks as the crater forms. They use techniques like finite element analysis, hydrodynamics, and particle dynamics. So prior to this paper, there were some experiments that had been done on common organisms where they would put them in rock samples and hit them, and they would be generating pressures of a couple of gigapascals. That's about 20,000 atmospheres of pressure. And the kind of bacteria that were being tested were common varieties, things that are well known and understood, things like E. coli, which is common in the human gut, or Bacillus subtilis, which is tough. It can form this like endospore that will protect when conditions get hostile. So these older experiments found out that these common bacteria had vanishingly small chances of survival, on the order of 1 in 10,000 at the kinds of pressures expected. And that was even before they went on an extended vacation in deep space. But this recent experiment focused on an extremophile organism known as Deinococcus radiodurans, a bacteria which was discovered in the 1960s during research on food irradiation. Even at radiation levels that would kill anything else, something would survive. And there's been a lot of research on how this particular bacteria is able to survive. Radiodurans gets its name because of its resistance to radiation. It has multiple copies of its DNA that are twisted up in loops rather than having the ends dangling. It has developed extremely robust DNA repair mechanisms, being able to link the molecules back together even if the radiation has broken into hundreds of pieces. Those repair mechanisms have likely slowed its mutation rate, so much of this branch of the tree of life is apparently very, very old. This family includes extremophiles, which can survive being desiccated, frozen, baked, exposed to acid, and it can still come back to life when the conditions are right. These are the kind of organisms that might survive a few years in space and return to life when the rock falls into a new environment on another planet. This particular strain of bacteria has in fact been flown for years on the outside of the International Space Station, and when returned to Earth, it came back to life. Its radiation resistance is likely a side effect of its ability to survive desiccation. There's a story about this organism that called it Conan the Bacterium, proclaiming it to be the world's toughest organism. So for this experiment, the teams would take the samples of the bacteria and sandwich them between metal plates. Then they launched a projectile at it from a gas gun. This way they could measure the speed of the projectile and therefore derive the magnitude of the pressure pulse that would be experienced. But after each experiment, the cells were then subject to detailed testing that not only figured out the survival rate, but then would look at the cellular activity, which was activated in response to this damage. And in the end, they found this particular species had a massively improved chance of surviving at pressures of about 2 gigapascals, or 20,000 atmospheres. So at like 1.4 gigapascals, E. coli and other examples, they had survival rates of 0.01 to 1% at best. But Conan the Bacterium showed near 100% survival rates until the impact pressure was raised to 2.4 gigapascals. At that point, the survival rate is about 40%, which is still pretty substantial. So what this does is it massively increases the number of fragments from an impact crater which can be accelerated to escape velocity and yet still be exposed to conditions that life could survive. When an impact hits a surface, the meteorite will penetrate in and liquefy and vaporize, and it'll basically explode like a subsurface munition, blowing the surface outwards. The shock waves will transmit outwards and it will accelerate portions of the Earth. Now, the further away you get from the impact point, the lower the pressures are going to be, but also the lower the acceleration is going to be. And the question is, how big a crater do you need to get before you start seeing pressures that are low enough for this kind of bacteria to survive, and yet the material is accelerated fast enough to reach escape velocity? So if you sort of think about a rough approximation of the acceleration, you have to say that a particle that is accelerated from the middle of the crater has to pretty much reach its target velocity by the edge of it. And so if it's accelerated out of a small crater, then it has to be accelerated at a much higher rate and therefore will experience higher forces. So what we really need to do is find the largest craters in history. Like Chicxulub crater is like something like 100 miles across. That is the biggest crater in the record, in recent record, you know, 65 million years ago. And that might be actually too small for significant amounts of life to survive. But if you go back further through history, we find craters that were formed 3 billion years ago. There's multiple of them, which based upon the amount of debris that has been deposited in various geological strata, the craters could be as large as 600 kilometers across. These are minor planets that are hitting the surface and excavating huge chunks of the Earth. There are fragments of these old craters that still exist, but it's hard to identify specific ones and figure out just how big they are. Now, if you rewind through time, what we see in the cratering record is that soon after the formation of the Earth, there were a lot more large impactors. And as time has gone on, these impactors have sort of been removed from the solar system because they've fallen onto planets. And it's much more rare in recent times to have very large objects like the ones that killed the dinosaur. And I say recent times, 65 million years is a lot more recent than 3 billion years. But there's evidence of life on Earth dating back to before 4 billion years. So there's this window where we have these very large impact craters being formed that are probably large enough to throw material off of Earth that could escape and potentially contaminate Mars. And so maybe when we look at life on Mars, we will find out that it's actually life that came from Earth. This is, of course, a process that has a name. It's called panspermia, as in we are sending seeds across the universe. Okay, and so here is the real mind-blowing moment. This is far more likely to have operated in the opposite direction. It's far more likely that life from Mars could reach the Earth than vice versa. So Mars is a lot smaller. Because it's smaller, it means the escape velocity is lower. Therefore, smaller impacts are needed to launch the rocks into space. Secondly, Mars is closer to the asteroid belt and therefore has been hit by more objects during its history. Third, because Mars is smaller, it would have cooled faster than the Earth. Therefore, it had water probably before the Earth. And we're talking, you know, millions of years before the Earth. Mars could have been potentially more habitable than the Earth. And so if we take all these things together, we could potentially have life forming on Mars before the Earth is even ready to sustain life, right? That means that when the Earth is ready to support life, the chunks of rock getting knocked off Mars could potentially seed life on Earth. And so yeah, this isn't a completely wacky concept that life could have started on Mars and came to Earth, right? There's nothing really in the laws of physics that says this is impossible. The real problem is that we don't know how life actually goes from being completely abiotic to having life, right? We don't know if the conditions on Mars would be large enough, whether it would have enough energy in the system to do. And we don't know how that would happen on Earth. Therefore, we're certainly not going to know how it would start on Mars. Saying that Earth was seeded by life from space, that does solve the problem of how life formed on Earth, but it doesn't solve the problem of how it formed elsewhere. This is like a fascinating little concept in the a little corner in astrobiology that's worth investigating. On a more practical level, what this does is it says, hey, if we are bringing material back from Mars and we are worried about biological contamination, we need to understand that rocks on Mars can get kicked off and potentially could have biological material that is still viable. This means if you're, say, getting samples from the moons of Mars, those could certainly harbor material that has some biological history and perhaps could actually be the first way we find out about life on Mars and the solar system in general. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.
And once again, the first 100 people to sign up to support Planet Wild using my code will get their first month paid for. Just scan this QR code or click the link in the description. If you want to see Planet Wild in action, check out their wildlife mission here.